I'd like to look at Luke chapter 16 tonight as we continue to work our way through Luke's gospel account of the life and personal ministry and glorification of Jesus Christ. This particular subject, at least the subject of the first 13 chapters, I preached in a sermon a couple of years ago, it was in 2017, just dealing with the parable of the unjust or unrighteous steward. But in this series of lessons, what I'm trying to do is keep in mind that all of these chapters were written as part of one book, one letter. And it stands to reason that there's a connection between the things before and the things after the particular section that we are studying. And I believe that to be the case tonight as we look at Luke 16. So we'll look again at the parable, but in connection with the events that surround it to get the greater context of the passage. This lesson tonight I've entitled Shrewd Foresight and Preparation for the Future. That's the meat of this particular section of Jesus' teaching. Motivation to do something typically requires persistent forethought or foresight and forward looking. If you're going to stay motivated to do something, there's going to have to be an element of foresight. What is my goal? What am I trying to accomplish? And you think about, just the idea of exercising and maybe losing some weight or something. It's real easy to get discouraged if you stay right in the moment. You have to look forward and think about where you're trying to get to and what you're trying to accomplish, and that will help motivate you. From a spiritual perspective, that is so important and so essential to our success as Christians. There are plenty of things happening to keep us in the moment and to keep us focused on things that pertain to the here and now and even this life. But if we're going to live in view of future reward, then we're going to have some foresight and forethought and deal with life shrewdly, or that is to say, providentially, with the idea of providence for the future, to exercise wisdom in our planning and preparation. Luke 16 is about that, but it's focused toward the mind of Jesus' disciples, as well as those who were his critics. He's going to give a parable. He's going to talk about the attitude of the scribes and the Pharisees. And then he's going to give what I think contextually is an example of the lack of shrewdness and preparation in what we learn about the rich man and Lazarus in the latter part of that chapter. You can look at either of these sections completely separate and learn a biblical lesson that is good for us, whether the parable of the unrighteous steward or the rich man and Lazarus. And those two sections could stand very beneficially on their own. Or tonight, what I'm suggesting is let's pull them back together contextually and see the relationship to them and between them. So let's begin just two sections, verses 1 through 13, and then verses 14 through 31, and then some practical lessons from what we've learned. So read along with me Luke 16, verses 1 through 13. He also said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, 'What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' Then the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do, that when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him. And he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. All right, so let's notice a few things in this section. First, the steward came into a situation where he was suspected of defrauding his master. In this parable, we're not really told how that came to light. It's not really important how it came to light, since it is a parable. Typically, in a parable, there's one central teaching. There are a lot of peripheral things in the parable to make it a story that's usable, but there's one central theme here. We get caught up in the unrighteousness of this individual and that Jesus uses him as an example. What you have to remember is there's a central point, and it's not be unrighteous, it's be shrewd. Exercise wisdom and foresight and judgment like the individual in this story did. So the master suspects that he has been defrauded by the one who had been given stewardship of his things, and he's about to be put out of the stewardship. So he thinks, how can I deal with this situation in a way that will keep me off the streets, basically, that will give me a place to go and an outlet when I'm cut off from my master? And so he works the opportunity, and he made future provisions. In effect, he created debtors for himself. And there are a number of ways this could have come about. It could have been that he had inflated what he had charged to these individuals who were in debt to his master in order to procure some income for himself. And if that were the case, then maybe what he got back from them was just the return that the master was expecting. We don't know. I'm just pointing out there are a number of ways this could have unfolded. But in his effort to create a situation favorable for himself, his master didn't miss that. He saw it. And that's the singular focus of this parable. Not the unjustness, but the shrewdness. Here's a man of the world, a worldly thinking and worldly minded man, but he has the foresight, the shrewdness, the wisdom to look far enough into the future to make a way and a means for himself so that when he fails, he's ejected, he's fired, he's kicked out, he has put someone else in his debt so that he has a place to go. If you look at verse 8 again, the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. Now look at this. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. Again, Jesus is not suggesting that we become like a wicked man who has defrauded his master, but to look in a very focused way at how he handled that situation for his own benefit. And the idea is, as Jesus says, it's often the case that people in the world and their dealings with material things, their foresight and their forethought in dealing with material things bears some lessons for us from a spiritual perspective. I dare say that you don't even have to look at a wicked person to get that point. We can look at our own lives and look at some of the preparations and the foresight and the forethought that we put into material things in our lives. Studying for a test, young people. How much time, maybe every night during the week, I'm going to give you a lot of credit here. Every night during the week, you stay up late studying for this test because it's important. You don't want to fail this test. Or maybe for adults and working, maybe there's a vacation or maybe something else. The holidays are coming up. And so we're going to put in extra time at work and we're going to work a lot of overtime in order to prepare for that event. Worldly things, things that pertain to this material world, Jesus points out the fact that men are often very shrewd, very wise in their dealings, very providential or forward-thinking in these material areas. And yet, when it comes to spiritual things, there's often an absence of that kind of preparation, that kind of forethought, that kind of shrewdness. That's what Jesus is highlighting about the events and the elements of this particular parable. If you look at verse 11, therefore, if you've not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? If we don't learn such foresight and wisdom, or rather, we might say, it's important for us to learn such foresight and wisdom because it will have eternal benefits to the extent that we learn to apply those same things in spiritual areas. Investments, working diligently, putting in the overtime to make good things happen spiritually in our lives and in the life of the church. So here's the parable of the unrighteous steward. Now, look at the second part of this chapter, thinking of it as a continuation of thought here. Begin with me at verse 14. Now, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him. The idea of deriding him is the idea of turning up the nose or hooking the nose with the idea of hanging, you know, the person that you're criticizing on the hook of your nose. So they derided Jesus because of these instructions and these truths. They had heard these things, but they were lovers of money. They were materially focused people. And then at verse 15, he directs his attention to them and he says, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God has been preached, and everyone is pressing into it. There's the idea of stepping on one another with urgency to try to get into this kingdom, but not these individuals. And it's easier for heaven and earth to pass away than for one tittle of the law to fall. Remember, Jesus looks, we see the criticism, right, that's recorded, but Jesus sees past the criticism. He sees into the very hearts, and we're often told that he, knowing their hearts, said unto them. It's interesting, these two accusations that Jesus makes of them, one, they're lovers of money, two, there are those who are pressing into the kingdom, but not these. There is this idea of not one tittle of the law falling away till all is fulfilled. The tittle, if you're not familiar with that, if you think about someone maybe who writes in a fancy script or something, and as they write, maybe there's a little tail on a letter as they finish it. Well, that that's the idea of a tittle in the Hebrew characters. Those little marks are finishing touches to a letter, the jot or the tittle. Not even that is going to pass away from the law until all is fulfilled. Again, as Jesus looks into their minds and hearts, he can see their attitude about the law. Verse 18 is interesting in this connection, for it to be included contextually. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced from her husband commits adultery. Again, looking into their hearts, seeing the things that they're thinking, the things that they're doing, and the lack of foresight, the lack of shrewdness, their focus on the here and now, which is typically the cause of situations like this, loving money, unfaithfulness in marriage, a failure to keep the law of God, all of that lacks foresight and wisdom and shrewdness. And then, at verse 19, he gets into, some call this a parable. I don't think it's a parable. Rarely do you see an individual mentioned specifically by name if it's a parable. If it's a parable, Jesus just made up a name here. So it's not a parable. It's a real life event of historical characters to which they ought to be able to relate as he tries to drive this lesson home to them. What lesson? Well, the need for shrewdness, the need for foresight, the need for preparation for the future, especially from a spiritual perspective. And so at 19 we read, there was a certain man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was left laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. Notice the shrewdness of Lazarus. He didn't say, throw me a steak. He didn't say, throw me half the meal you prepared. Just let me have the crumbs, and I'll be satisfied with that. Verse 22, so it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes, and he saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I'm tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted and you are tormented. Besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brethren, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. Let's look at this incident that Jesus recounts in light of the whole purpose of this section of Luke. He starts now with the Pharisees. They're lovers of money. They're focused on the here and now. Money won't do you or me any good in eternity. In fact, there's no way to convert the currency from the here to the there. It only applies here and now. And they're lovers of money, and typically lovers of money don't have the foresight and the wisdom to use it shrewdly. And so they turn their nose up at him. We already talked about that. He says that they justify themselves before men, but God knows their hearts. They esteem what is abominable to God. The things that God would consider abominable, those are the things that they elevate, that they esteem, because they're worldly things. They're here and now things. They don't represent shrewdness. They don't represent spiritual forethought into the future. He includes these two observations. They fail to keep the law and they commit adultery. So Jesus knows some things about their attitude and their behavior and why they are who they are because of their material mindset and thinking. It's interesting here, if you'll remember back in the parable, the shrewd one made debtors for himself for the future. He had a recourse. Because he dealt wisely, there was someone in his immediate future to whom he could turn for relief. But now in the rich man and Lazarus, we're introduced to a man who had the same opportunity. He had Lazarus laid at his gate full of sores, begging for crumbs from his table. And yet he paid him no attention. And then in the future, the very fact that he'd missed the opportunity to deal shrewdly with Lazarus is demonstrated in the fact that Lazarus couldn't even come and drop a water on his tongue to cool him and torment in the flame which tormented him. A man who had resources here was not shrewd in the utilization of those things. His lack of future planning, his lack of forward thinking, instead of putting Lazarus, just parallel thinking here, instead of putting Lazarus in his debt, put him in Lazarus' debt. Only in that spiritual situation, there was no way to reverse that, no way to change the circumstances of that situation because of the finality of it. The point is, it's too late when the opportunity for shrewd thought and wise forethinking has passed, and it had passed for the rich man. We can only assume here that Jesus is implying that these individuals, the Pharisees in particular, are headed down the same road. They're passing up the opportunity to deal shrewdly with their circumstances and situations in life. And they are going to end up in the same situation as the rich man. Instead of having prepared, they're going to be in debt with no recourse to reverse their situation. Now, what are some practical lessons that you and I can take from this passage tonight? Number one, if we put as much energy into spiritual forethought as we often do in material, worldly forethought, what eternal benefits might be realized by that? We've mentioned some already. Just think of the preparation that we make for certain events in our worldly lives. But those, there's an inconsistency when it comes to spiritual things. Think about time with our children and how easy it is to get distracted in this world and to see other things as more important. And the time and opportunity that God has given us to be shrewd, to be wise, to be forward-thinking, it's very easy for us to forfeit that and not make investments, forward-thinking investments in our families and with our children in particular, that would have eternal, pay eternal dividends. You don't just have to think about this on an individual level. You can think about it on a congregational level too. Think about that for us as a body of people in this place, trying to be a light to our community, trying to take the gospel to the lost. If we as a group put as much energy into spiritual forethought as we often do in material, what benefits might we realize? Now, this is just an observation generally. It's becoming more and more difficult to get people to be interested in spiritual things, because there's so much in the material present here and now that consumes our attention. And congregations become stagnant. They develop pockets or voids in the membership where, you know, you can have a generation that has four or five men who are leaders, capable leaders in the congregation. And then you can have a generation or two after that where, You know, no foresight, no forethought, no shrewdness was utilized to make sure that there was a consistent flow of men who could serve as leaders. I look at my generation and I think, what happened? Where are the leaders? Because there seems to be even a lack of Christian men in my age range. You might look around and see similarities in your age range as well. It seems to be the case that a lack of forethought and foresight and wisdom, forward thinking, puts us into very difficult situations, not just individually, but as a Christian community or the church. Number two, there is a direct connection between wise dealing with what we have and what Christ is willing to commit to our trust. Jesus says here in the parable, if you can't, and paraphrasing, if you can't figure out how to deal shrewdly and wisely in the unrighteous mammon, the things pertaining to this world, who's going to entrust to you the greater things, spiritual things? And again, you can look at that individually or as on a congregational level. Just generally speaking, a congregation may wonder why they're flailing. They don't have many opportunities. Things aren't going well. There's no growth. It might be good and healthy to look at how we have dealt with what we have been given. You know, just think about a parent with a child, and maybe you're trying to teach them how to deal with money, and you may give them maybe a $5 bill just to see how long it lasts. It typically would burn a hole in their pocket within a week. But if they're able to shrewdly utilize those resources, what do? Well, you might increase it and give them more and give them more leeway with it. The same principles, the same ideas are being taught here, but with spiritual connotations. Our blessings from God and our opportunities are directly proportionate to our ability to steward those things. A third lesson, our investment in the lost, the weak, the suffering, the needy, pays spiritual returns on our investment in them. Now look at the rich man. There is an opportunity at his gate every day. He did nothing with it. How might this have looked if the wise man, or if the rich man, had been shrewd when he entered into paradise, and there in Abraham's bosom was also Lazarus, and the comfort and the reassurance that might have come from that because of the connection between the two of them. The rich man had used his resources and, in a sense, prepared for his future. Here he is in the same place with Lazarus, whereas he didn't, and he's in a different place, a place in a situation where he can receive no benefit from the one that he had despised. I recall Jesus saying something very similar to this when he talked about being in prison and you visited me naked and you clothed me, and the question was asked, when did we do that? And as much as you did it to the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Or the reverse of it, I was naked and you clothed me not. I was sick and you visited me not. I was in prison. When did we do that? Inasmuch as you did it not to the least of these, you did it not to me. There are opportunities in the material, the here and now, where God has given us an opportunity to be shrewd with our resources and with our opportunities. And we can't afford to miss those, because the utilization of those things, when we are opportunistic, when we are forward thinking, we'll pay spiritual returns. Number next, our justification must come from God and not men. These Pharisees were perfectly content with being who they were. They don't have to be shrewd. They don't have to be forward thinking, because they judge themselves by themselves. And the measure of their success is dependent upon what they say about each other. And when we measure ourselves by ourselves, we're destined to the same situation. But our justification comes from God, who knows our hearts. And he knows whether or not we are being shrewd, whether we are exercising wisdom and forward thinking. And then finally, when it's too late, it's really too late. The rich man, I keep saying wise man, but he was very wise. The rich man had exhausted his opportunity to be wise and to be shrewd. And he could see Lazarus and he says, if we take a little bit of liberty here, hey, I know him. He laid at my gate for days upon days. Father Abraham, send him here that he can cool my tongue with a drop of water. It's too late. The point is, and the point that Jesus was making, not look at this wicked man and be just like him, but look at the wisdom he exercised when he realized there was a need to prepare for the future. And at least in that quality and that characteristic, be like him. We're to have the mindset and the forethought to realize we're not here forever. And where we are going is going to last a whole lot longer than the here and now. If we invest all of our energy and our resources in the here and now, and we don't make any investments for that place, we are not very smart. In fact, this unrighteous steward has exercised more wisdom than we have. Too many people are living in the moment and not thinking ahead. And that would be a tragedy if that were the description of our lives. So let's learn from the parable and from the rich man and Lazarus the importance of being wise, of being shrewd in our dealings with foresight and forethought for the future. The shrewdness is what is exemplary about this parable for our lives today. May God help us to see now the need to prepare for the future and to do just that. So we bring this service to a close tonight. We extend the Lord's invitation. Maybe you're here in need of obeying the gospel tonight through faith, repentance, confession, and of course, baptism for the remission of your sins. Maybe you have some other need that we can assist you with. We stand ready and eager to help you in any way that we can, if you'll let it be known as we stand and sing.